Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to my program Here, There, and Everywhere. This is Watcher Ruth coming to you this evening. It is May the 9th, 2013. Just getting ready for Mother's Day this weekend. Hallelujah. Thank you for tuning in this evening. This evening I have my honor to bring David Christie in from the Linda LaRouche Pack. He is here visiting me with his troop, an army from the LaRouche Pack, fighting the fight that the American public needs to know about. And David, can you please come on board and tell us a little bit about why we're talking this evening, the Glass-Steagall, etc.?
Well, we have really a single integrated policy right now to save the nation, and frankly, by saving our nation, the rest of the world, or at least acting as a beacon for the rest of the world, on two fronts. One is the immediate impeachment of Barack Obama, and two is the installation of Glass-Steagall, but more than just the banking reform. Glass-Steagall is a statement, and its passage now means a statement of a return to the kind of economic thinking that founded this nation under the policies of Hamilton. But two key the elements of the mission right now, of the impeachment and Glass-Steagall, are crucial for saving the United States and extension of the world.
For my listeners, could you please explain a little bit about what the Glass-Steagall Act is and how it might have protected us from the devastating economic collapse that we've all been feeling for the last ever so long, 5 or 6 years now?
Right. The Glass-Steagall Act is repealed in 1999 under the so-called Graham-Leach-Bliley bill. And what it did, it was part of Franklin Roosevelt's, the 1933 Banking Act. This was under Roosevelt and was really instrumental in an ability to launch the New Deal and to get the economy and the American people out of, moving after the Depression. And what it did as part of the 1933 Banking Act, other elements of the 1933 Banking Act were things like the FDIC, where deposits in banks were guaranteed because under Glass-Steagall standards, a commercial bank was not allowed to engage in speculative activities, brokerage, insurance and these kind of functions, but rather a commercial bank which took deposits turned around and lended the money bank out, but it went into, as part of the regulation, was only allowed to go into loans for businesses, loans for the real economy, and for farmers and the manufacturers and so forth, and therefore the keys of the bankers was to figure out how to make sure the money went to the people that were going to grow the real economy. And therefore, this is what allowed the government to insure those deposits, because they knew that under Glass-Steagall, those deposits would not be used for speculation. And so, Wall Street was right? So under Glass-Steagall, the commercial banking was separate from the investment banking, the brokerage activities, and so forth, right? And so what happened was that was the law of the land from 1933 until 1999, until it was repealed. And when it was repealed, the mergers and so forth were allowed, where commercial banks were allowed to take the deposits and engage in the kind of speculative activity, knowing that they would get government bailouts. So this is one of the arguments that comes up around Glass-Steagall. They say, many of these banks, Goldman Sachs and these types, they wouldn't have Glass-Steagall wouldn't have defended this. The point is, these guys would never have been so stupid to engage in the kind of speculation that they were engaged in. Some of this was around the housing market, obviously, things like the mortgage-backed securities and the bundling of mortgages and selling securities based on whether rising values and so on and so forth. They would have never gotten engaged in these kind of, because they knew it was a scam. But the only reason they got engaged in these kind of scams and these kind of Ponzi scheme finance is because they knew they were going to get government guarantees because Glass-Steagall no longer applied. And they had just changed their charter to become banks changed their charters to become commercial banks so that they could get the government guarantees on what they knew were worthless financial assets. I would say that's how it would have prevented it. But again, to be just more clear, Glass-Steagall, it's a statement of principle, and it's a statement of our Constitution that our government is not going to allow for gambling in banking, that instead we use the banking for the development of the real economy for progress. Make innovations in, make advancements in technology to get the credit going into the advancement of the real economy. So that's why I would say Glass-Steagall does it. There's more to it. That's, I guess, a quick overview.
Can you give us a little information, David, on what the LaRouche Pact is doing to reinstitute, to bring back this Glass-Steagall, and on an individual level, as just JQP, John Q. Public, here we are, we're listening to you speaking today, and we know we have a small window of opportunity to take our country back, even if we can at this point. What would you be suggesting that we do that will empower us to be able to take the direction, to be able to empower ourselves to bring this Glass-Steagall Act back?
Well, there is a bill in Congress, in the House of Representatives, House Resolution 129, put forward by Marcy Kaptur and Walter Jones. And we now have about 60 sponsors to the bill. 61 if you include Kaptur. So the bill is in Congress. We need to get more signers of the House bill. We need a companion bill in the Senate. Now, there are many senators who have said that they're for Glass-Steagall. Washington is one. Angus King of Maine is another. Elizabeth Warren campaigned heavily on Glass-Steagall from Massachusetts. Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin was a signer of the House Resolution 1489 when she was in the House of Representatives. So there is wide support for Glass-Steagall. John McCain and Maria Campbell had teamed up in 2010 to introduce Glass-Steagall as an amendment in the Dodd-Frank bill. That was shot down by the Obama administration and the pressure continues to be put on the Senate to not introduce a companion bill for Glass-Steagall to match the House version. But what we need to do and what we've been doing with LaRouche PAC is we've organized the state legislatures to put the pressure on the federal Congress. And in the case of the Senate, actually, one of the gentlemen that helped in the mobilization at the state level, He made the point. He said, you know what, we need to repeal the 17th Amendment. And at the time, I thought, I didn't even know what the 17th Amendment is. And what it is the state legislatures used to elect the senators because they wanted to ensure that they at least had some connection to the states of which they're supposed to represent. And that was repealed by the 17th Amendment, or that was and now what many of these state legislators feel like is that these senators go out there, they spend more time to the lobbyists, Goldman Sachs, and JP Morgan and company, and they are increasingly distant from the states that they represent. And so what we have done is we've gone to state legislature around the country to get them to put pressure on the U.S. Congress. Because whether the senators may know this, is that without that support at the base, it doesn't really matter how much money they have in their campaigns. If the grassroots, which the state legislature are immediately involved in, aren't behind the campaign, then it becomes difficult. But what we've done is we've established that connection again. We have now 18 state legislatures that have introduced memorials that call on the Congress to act. Of those 18 states, 4 states have actually passed the resolutions, some in both the houses, and so Maine has passed it in both houses, South Dakota, I think it's Alabama, Alabama, I think, for the fourth one. So we obviously need to get more states moving on this, get more state legislators, city councils, county commissions, to just build
and there's kind of the direction I want to go, David, is that it's at the community level. It's in your community council meetings, your city council meetings. It's speaking to your mayor. It's talking to your neighbor. It's getting the word out. It's calling your congressman and your senator. It's taking power away from them and letting our representatives know that we're calling them, we're giving them a heads up on this. And so, not to beleaguer that fact, but can you tell me a little bit, David, what your LaRouche has been working this week action?
Well, in the week of action, we've had over the period 80 people on Capitol Hill through the week of action here, pressing heavily on Glass-Steagall, trying to get a breakthrough of someone in the Senate to introduce it. We've also been bringing letters of endorsement from around the world, particularly from Europe. For example, one letter is signed by 300 mayors, well, actually some 260 or so mayors, another 30, 40 economists, and other notable people who are calling on the U.S. Congress to act on Glass-Steagall. Europe has lost sovereignty, and this is partly what their appeal is based in, is that Europe has gone along with the what we just saw with the Cyprus model is about to be applied to not just the nations of Europe, but New Zealand, Canada, and you may have guessed it, the United States too, that they can have a Cyprus-style theft of the deposits they did in Cyprus. And that is what Glass-Steagall would prevent. So we were there on Capitol Hill. These international letters of endorsement coming from France, from part of the parliamentarian in Iceland who had introduced a Glass-Steagall banking separation bill in the Icelandic parliament. You had a congressman from Colombia. You had professors from Spain, political activists, all from around the world, sending these letters calling on the Congress to act. It had a very profound impact where people realized that this was a much bigger fight. This was a fight for humanity, whether or not we were going to allow ourselves to be raped and pillaged by this international financial cabal that is out to kill people off, as has been stated. Really the core of this is the British, the financial interests out of London, which is part of the old British East India Company, which is the the remnants of the what is the British Empire. And that...
Well, David, I got to tell you, my listeners know all about the British Empire. And I'll tell you, they're very, very, very smart listeners that we have this evening. With that, can you describe to me the implications of the finance and the Glass-Steagall come together, this impeachment process that we're beginning to gain momentum on? We know that Glass-Steagall is something that we need to reinstitute. We know that financial woes. We've got these situations where we know that there hasn't been a minute of truth spoken. How do we go about taking our path back and providing information to know about getting this impeachment thing? Do it on a level. The LaRouche pack, given that, can you give my audience your contact name and number and how they may be able to facilitate some further assistance to get the Glass-Steagall Act either financially support you or otherwise?
Well, I think people can call. There's an 800 number here, and I'll just give that number, 800-927-7566. I will read that one more time here, 1-800-929-7566, and that's to the National Center, so people can call in and leave a message if you don't reach somebody immediately. But, yeah, that we need people around the country to mobilize, particularly on glass. But as you just mentioned, the impeachment, which is gaining new traction or gaining traction, in part because of the fact that under Obama and his commitment to a war with Syria or some sort of provocation with Syria, as part of a larger war, and that what we've seen over the last years, really since Bush and Cheney and their rampage of wars, what some of the nations that under for the new American century, and if you look at the list of target nations, what you realize is that Syria, Iran, North Korea. This is all a massive encirclement process of Asia, and particularly the large population centers in India and China. But this obviously targets Russia as well, given their nuclear capabilities. And so what you've had in the recent period is as the drive under Obama was acting as a puppet of this international financial interest, centered on the British, the British East India Company grouping, the monarchy, the queen, her policy of war and genocide and so forth. What you have is as Obama pushes for a confrontation in Iran, this, especially this recent provocation by Israel going in and bombing Syria, that has put the whole region at the very minimum danger of a regional war, but as people actually on the staff know, this is a very tender and dangerous situation that could rapidly spiral out of control, where all of the nuclear weapons are being exchanged by people. And that this would be part of the intention, again, is the threats that Obama is initiated through these wars, which are ultimately to target the nations of Asia, then to back out from their economic development, what we've seen in China, the beginnings of India, that they are not going along with the globalization agenda. They are not going along with the environmentalists and The other policy that's prescribed by the British Empire, they are being with. And so this is where the tension.
Did I lose you, David? I think I lost my caller. No, he still looks. Yes, I'm going to have him call back in. Go ahead and call back in, David. I'm going to invite any of my listening audience this evening, if they have any questions that they'd like to pose to my guest this evening from the Linda and LaRouche pack, please give me a call on my guest call-in line. The number is 347-945-5170. Again, this is Watcher Ruth coming to you this evening with David Christie from the Linda LaRouche Pack. David, can you tell me a little bit about the North American Water Power Alliance?
This was a project that clearly built back in the 1960s under the leadership of John F. Kennedy, and really as an extension of what Roosevelt did with the New Deal. It would have been something like the Tennessee Valley Authority, but on a much expanded scale, and was to utilize the massive runoff water up in Yukon and British Columbia, which just dumps off into the North Atlantic or the Arctic Ocean, and instead divert that water through naturally existing gorges and so forth to bring that to the parched lands of the Southwest United States and then also over to equalize the Great Lakes system and as well the Mississippi and Missouri basins. And so you could really have a continental water management system. And what we need NWAPA now, among other things, but I think this be really the keystone economic recovery program, that once Glass-Steagall is initiated and the speculative debt is thrown in the trash and given back to Wall Street so they can deal with it, what we're going to find out is the amount of legitimate money, in other words, money that has ties to the real economy, won't be very much less. And therefore, we're going to have to issue new money, but it will be based on a credit system. In other words, based on future economic development. And credibility of that credit, which is the same concept, would be based on these kind of future development projects like the WAPA. We know that it will generate tons of electricity and water for agriculture, and it will be worth the value that we ascribe to it because it creates something for the future. So it will create 6 million jobs immediately with really a multiplier effect. It will generate 42,000 megawatts of electricity through hydropower. It will deliver 108 million acre-feet of water, which is potentially it's approximately the same amount of water that we use to irrigate. So it's a very significant boost for our food production and energy production as well. And it's part of getting our people some optimism that we don't have to wallow in the mud and not develop, but that we can move forward and rebuild the nation.
Yes, and I know that this program was you kind of pulled the dust off of this program for the cause of putting the people back to work. But can you tell me where was the original plan, or when was the original plan for this North American Water Power Alliance instigated, and why was it shelved? Why was it not further looked into and investigated by the administrations at the time and the administration now? And why is it that with the unemployment statistics, what they are right now, why does the administration, you think, not want to move forward with plans like these that have been available for quite some time?
Well, under the Obama administration, he is a puppet of the Queen and her agenda, which is to prevent development. This is the whole point of environmentalism. Environmentalism is not to save the trees and the birds and not dump mercury in our waters and all this. That's just common sense. Environmentalism is to tie up large tracts of land to prevent, recently by the Obama administration, was to prevent inter-basin transfers. In other words, from one water basin to another. And that was to prevent things like NWAPA from developing. But the point is, they have said it over and over. The Queen has said it. We have way too many people on the planet. We need to reduce the world population. We need to scale back from 7 billion to less than 1 on their psychotic days, 2 billion on their more generous days, and recently somebody said 4.5 billion. So the question, of course, is where are the 2.5, 3, 6 billion people going to go? And they don't care about that, because that's the whole point of this environmentalist agenda and the agenda of the Obama administration and the British Empire, which controls him, is to reduce the world population. So this is why they have prevented these kind of development programs. And so it was shelved, but it nearly passed Congress in 1964, the NWAPA, the North American Water and Power Alliance, nearly went through Congress in 1964. But really the momentum for it really died with Kennedy, and really much of the paradigm shift that was brought in after his death is where we're at now.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the last few minutes that we have program, I want to just thank you very much for coming on the air and discussing some of these issues, bringing forth important information to my listeners, giving them the ability to become empowered, to go out and make a difference with all of the events that are transpiring so quickly in our country today. We need to unite as a country under one banner. I feel that, as others do, that without unity of mind and knowing that we no longer adhere to this left-right paradigm, we know that that's a failed system. It was a globalist idea to begin with. And because we're empowered again with people like you coming on the radio and letting us know what the truth is, the government's not going to let us know or give us an opportunity to even make a decision as to where our future lies and what the vision of it is. And with that, I just want to thank everyone in your organization for your very hard, dedicated work. And I want to invite all my listeners to, again, get in touch with David and the Lyndon LaRouche Pack if you wish to know anything about the Glass-Steagall Act, the future impeachment of Barack Hussein Obama, our fearless tyrant leader. This is Watcher Ruth. God bless y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I appreciate you listening. God bless, God bless, and we'll talk to you again soon. Say hi to your families, say hi to your mom, and give her a big hug this weekend. Thanks again. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. This is Watcher Ruth.